Hey, everybody. It's the 11th of October, 2021. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education as we start a new week in October. All right. We also have our new website, SEL Today, all about social emotional learning over at seltoday.org. Our equity stuff is over at ace-ed.org, including the new issue of our magazine, which is just excellent, called Equity and Access, our online journal, again, at ace-ed.org. And that's also where we're going to archive this podcast, as we do with every podcast that we do. And today we've got a special treat. My good friend Phyllis Wolfram is here from the Council of Administrators of Special Education. And we're going to be talking to her about the annual conference and all the critical issues that are facing the special ed education part of education in K-12 and pre-K-12. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's Monday, so I'm going to say good morning to Phyllis. I'm just babbling here. Hi, Phil.
Good morning. Good morning. It's nice to be with
you. How are you?
It's
nice to be with you, too. And it's Indigenous Peoples Day, the former Columbus Day, or it's Columbus Day, the current Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah, my young daughter reminded me of that, and she thought she might have the day off from work because she thought it might be a holiday, and then she realized she's not off work. So she was a little disappointed, but we were having that conversation just last night.
Yeah, no, I could have taken off from work, but I had a podcast to do with my friend Phyllis Wolfram.
That's right. Yeah. Don't miss that.
Yeah, so I'm glad. It's good to hear your voice, Phil. And are you all excited about the conference coming up?
I am. We are just planning away. We have a full house. As a matter of fact,
yep.
We have a waiting list for people to register for the conference. We have filled every exhibit table and keep finding space to add another one as so many of the companies want to come and share the resources that they have available. And you know as well as I do, with all the ESSER funds coming out, we're hoping that our educators will tap into some of those great resources that maybe they have not been able to access in the past.
That's right.
In order to meet, all the varying student needs. And we know that our kiddos are coming back to school with different needs and more needs than they've ever had before. So we're planning some special things, especially in our exhibit hall, to really connect those school leaders with the resources that are out there. So that part's going to be real exciting as well. But it is it's a full house this year, Larry, so we're excited.
Yeah. And I think that is great and so well-deserved, and I'm thrilled for you, and I'm thrilled for all those people who have gotten there, and I'm thrilled for all the companies who are going to be exhibiting there. And do me a favor. This is key. You heard me say, and you certainly know this. In fact, I hope you're going to participate in it, is our new SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning Today, seltoday.org site. But I wanted to talk to you about this. You know, every school district is trying to do social-emotional learning. But teachers have not been trained in that. But there is one group of teachers that can do it and are trained in it, and that's your group, special educators, okay, who are just a wonderful group of people. And I'm curious, as the exhibitors lined up and as you're looking at the priorities, put social-emotional learning in there and talk to all these educators who are listening about how special ed, that educator, fits into all this, Phil. I think it's great. It's a perfect timing for you guys.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. And I know you'll be very happy to hear that I'm promoting your SEL Today website. It'll come out in the weekly update tomorrow. It'll hit
Thank
about
you.
13,000 emails across the nation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I went on actually last night and was exploring, and I love the SEL exhibit hall.
There you go.
All the
there you go.
Place. I can't wait to tell more people about that.
Right. It's going to be getting bigger and bigger as we keep growing. We just started it. So it's going to be really good. And by the way, I'm going to go back to what we talked about a week ago. Don't forget to get me your stuff. I want to give you guys a booth on there. Okay,
yeah.
So you're in so Case is in the exhibit hall. Okay.
Well, once I went on, you know I'm running as fast as I can.
I know, yeah, believe me, I know. But we're going to get this together for you. Don't worry about that. But, you know, your list of exhibitors, okay, and this is so key. I mean, the social-emotional learning side of all the school districts, they want this to be embedded in their school culture. And everybody wonders, well, how are we going to do it? But as I said a minute ago, we've got the experts already, okay, the special ed folks. And, you know, does it all fit in together? I mean, what do you think?
It does. And I think what the critical factor there is the leadership in the school district. The leadership, the special ed director, the leadership of the superintendent, that team actually of administrators really working together, because it's not an us issue, it's not a them issue, it's an all ed issue. So it's not something that can be tossed over to counseling services. It's not something that can be just tossed over to health services or to special education. It has to be everybody working collectively together.
Exactly.
Because I think that when you do that, not only do you begin to focus on the needs of students, but we also know that our teachers need some wellness and not only training in social-emotional learning with their students and how to interact and how to engage appropriately, especially in crisis or when we perceive that something might be on the verge of a crisis. That's what's most important.
Yeah, even more important. More important. Yeah.
Yeah, and what we know is that as teachers are looking and engaging and we give them the tools to do those things, it is cognitively and emotionally draining for staff as well. So we have to keep the wellness of our staff as well as our students and their families in mind through this whole planning process and as we go down this path to continue to meet the needs of all these students.
It's just so important. You folks are right there. The conference is coming up. It's November 11th to the 13th, right?
It is.
A month from today. A month from today. It's October 11th. And I love this. It's in Little Rock, Arkansas.
So I have to tell you a couple stories about Little Rock. A couple of people said, we're going to Little Rock.
I like Little Rock.
I was there in May, and it's a beautiful venue right on the river. There's a river walk for those that want to exercise. Plus, you walk right out of the door of the hotel, and you've got this great big long avenue of shops and eateries and entertainment. So it is a perfect venue. We're hoping for the most perfect weather. There's a trolley that runs up and down the street. I've just been promoting it. We've met the most wonderful people at the Convention and Visitors Bureau. They're very welcoming. And so we are excited to go to Little Rock. We have a number of activities planned in the evening as well through the generosity of many of our sponsors. And so it's just going to be a great time. And then, Larry, I want to tell you something special that's happening in Little Rock for us as well. When you plan a conference, you do typically you're planning 3 years out. So this contract for our hotel and our conference was planned approximately 3 years ago. When things began happening in our world politically, and some decisions that were made by the legislatures in Arkansas around transgender youth, we had a little pushback.
Yeah.
We had not pushback. I wouldn't say that. We had questions from some of our membership and said, are you going to cancel the conference? Are you going to protest and put your foot down and not go to Little Rock? And of course, I panicked initially and said, oh my gosh, do you know how much it would cost me to get out of that contract?
Yeah.
and then we really thought about the issue at hand, and our case leadership got together and they said, what we really need to do is go there and support the transgender youth. We need to figure out a way to support those that might be working in the service industry, a lot of our young people, and not pull out by hurting their economy or their opportunity to work. But what a number of our members did in our Arkansas case group got together and they said, let's support Lucy's Place. And Lucy's Place is a place that provides LGBTQ young adults who are experiencing homelessness in Central Arkansas with safe living environments, job training, counseling. And so we're very excited to have a representative come and speak about Lucy's Place to our attendees. Yeah, so
it's nice.
And we may look at how we can contribute, you know, to helping them as well while we're there. So we thought it was good to highlight something along those lines.
And thank you for bringing that up. And that's a very key thing. And, you know, it's very good of you to do what you're doing. Okay, say what you're saying, do what you're doing, act on it. But you don't you don't punish the Little Rock, Arkansas Bureau, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, and not go there. Okay, it's a state and a union, and you know, it's actually a great state, and you know, to go to Little Rock and Arkansas and all that, I think you're going to have a good time. And I think the way you're handling it is absolutely perfect. Okay,
well,
don't let the political atmosphere of what's so screwy out there right now, okay, ruin a good thing, and that's exactly, you did it the right way. Congrats, Phil. I'm not surprised.
I think we just have to overcome and look beyond some of those political issues. You know,
some things transcend politics. We can't let, and we used to be a country where politics were one thing and life was another. Okay,
right,
and now all of
right.
a sudden everything's politics, and we can't, you just can't make that, you can't do that. So
right.
good for you. And by the way, I love it. I have to say this. Little Rock is one of those smaller off cities. Okay, that they always have a convention bureau. They usually have a nice convention hall or a big hotel, you know, that sort of thing. But there's not many conferences that go. And I think to have a national conference in a city like that is really a good thing. Okay, and I'm talking, you know what, I was thinking of another one that I was at. Oh, with Louisville, okay, which again is another great city, but it's not a big convention city. Okay,
right.
But yet I went to a conference there, and it was just great. And to get people to go to these cities that they might not normally go to for a conference is just great. I think you made a good choice all the way around. I really do.
I think it's just great. I think it's a shot to our economy, you know, in some of those tier two cities, which is really nice. And we also just, you know, kind of sharing. We were concerned that maybe our numbers might go down a little bit because we did inquire about
that.
And our numbers went up to the point of having a waiting list. And we had many people thank us. And I know that people make a personal choice or a medical choice, sometimes out of their control regarding vaccination. Our key issue and our key point there was all of these educators that are coming to learn and grow professionally will be returning to their home school districts and be around students and their families. And we want them to be safe while they're with us, and we want them to be safe when they go home. So we felt that that was the most important thing to do. And we overwhelmingly had some support with regard to that. And I know a number of the other associations are feeling some of that pressure. But, you know, lots of people have the choice to still work from home and be virtual in their professional careers, and teachers and administrators, school administrators, do not have that luxury. So I think we have to go the extra mile to protect them.
You do indeed. And speaking of that, everybody who's going to your conference, and again, it's sold out, has to be fully vaccinated. I was on your website today. Everybody has to be fully vaccinated. All right, which I think that's great. Okay, but obviously a lot of people, now that you're sold out, okay, can't get there. But there's a lot of great information going to be passed about special education, SEL, all that sort of stuff. Is there a virtual side to the conference, or will there be one after the conference so the folks who couldn't get there, okay, will be able to partake in the information?
This year for our on-site conference, we do not have a virtual component. However, in February, we will have our winter workshop, which will be virtual, and we will be doing a number of things on wellness and social-emotional learning and mental health. So that focus continues, and we will offer other things that are virtual. Our capacity just sometimes is a little limited for what we can offer all at one time. So not for our on-site conference, but we do have, and that on our website, the details aren't up yet, but the dates for the winter workshop are posted on the website in February, that second week of February, a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And we'll also be inviting a full day of some of our, if our sponsors, our companies that work with us want to take advantage of presenting, we'll have a full day of an opportunity for them to present their resources to anyone that registers virtually.
That's
so we're pretty excited. We got some real good feedback. We did that last year for those who presented at our first virtual conference because our first virtual exhibit hall we knew was a little different. So we gave them a second opportunity, and quite a few took advantage and really enjoyed that. So, we're excited about
It's going to be just terrific. What's the I haven't listened. But what are the priorities this year? You know, as you created presentations, you know, there's going to be presentations for everybody there and all that. What are the subject? What's the subject matter priorities that have come up in special ed? I could probably name them. I'm going to let you do it. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, one is the whole issue around equity was, you know, one of our biggest focus areas. And, you know, we have visited with Dr. Adolph Brown, who's our lead-off keynote for our opening general session. We have several keynote speakers coming. But he does an excellent presentation. I don't want to give too much away about what he does, but he is extraordinary. This will be my first time, but I have heard from a number of my colleagues who said his keynote presentation is the best one I have ever heard.
Wow.
And
wow.
So I'm very excited to hear what he's offering. But equity in education was a primary focus. We do have some very specific breakout sessions on Title IX and transgender issues in the schools and special education, compassionate leadership. Our other keynote that takes place on Friday morning is Dr. Richard Villa, and we're going to also talk a little bit about not just maybe equity from a leadership perspective, but with regard to curriculum and instruction and how we bring that down in the classroom. So we're very excited for those keynotes. And we also have the National Teacher of the Year, Juliana Ursabay, coming as one of our keynotes on Friday at lunch. We're excited to hear from her. She is a bilingual teacher from Las Vegas, Nevada, working in the area of special education. So we're excited to meet her, see what she has to offer.
Is she your National Teacher of the Year, or is she... who created that position, National Teacher of the Year?
So this is the National Teacher of the Year that comes through the Chief Council of State School Officers.
Okay, thank you. CCSSO. I wasn't sure the way you placed it. Yeah.
Yep.
That's a big deal.
And,
I work with them all the time. They're great.
It is
CCSSO.
A huge deal.
Yeah.
She was selected as Teacher of the Year from teachers of the year from each state. So each state, you know, has that process of nominating, you know, their teachers, their extraordinary teachers. So it is a great honor. I had the opportunity for the 2019 Teacher of the Year, Rodney Robinson. I've had the opportunity to listen to him twice. And he's extraordinary. So the selection process, I think, is quite rigorous and quite an honor.
And this teacher, this year's national teacher, is a special ed teacher.
Yes.
Wow.
Even,
wow.
Yeah. So we're very excited to see what she brings and the motivation and the sharing of some of the things that she has done in her classroom and in her community, because she's had a great community outreach as well as a teacher in her school district. So we're real excited to hear about that.
I'm sure she is special. She's a special, special ed person. Okay, she's double special. Okay, she really is. It's just incredible. What about the funding this year? Are there still going to be funding problems this year? And how does the special ed administrator walk through funding this year? Or this coming year,
well,
I should say. Yeah.
Well, I think this coming year, if they're accessing the ESSER funds in their school district, and if they're accessing the ARP funds, they have additional federal funding that's flowing into their school districts. They can use federal funds for professional learning for all staff in their school district, especially targeting that area of special education. But with the ESSER funds, that's even a broader opportunity for lots of people to engage in professional learning. We continue to have appropriations. We're looking, of course, at the president's budget and what his appropriations are, or what his recommendations are for special education, and it is a significant increase. We'll see how that goes through the appropriations committees. We continue to watch that with Hugh Myrna, our policy consultant out of D.C.
Absolutely.
And she comes on once a month for our members. So if you're not a member of CASE, you need to join so you can keep up with all things federal through 30 Minutes with Myrna.
Yep.
And that's actually tomorrow, 4 p.m. Central Time.
There you go.
And then also, Larry, our last keynote that we have on Saturday morning, because you can't have a special ed administrators conference without having a little bit of slant towards legal issues, so that we stay abreast of how we are expected to function and what some of the rules are as they change. So we have some of our esteemed attorneys from across the nation, Julie Weatherly, who is out of Alabama, Terry Engler, who is in Illinois, Dr. Kevin Rubenstein, who is our policy chair for CASE, and Dr. Timothy Harbord, who is also out of Alabama, director of student services in Auburn. And they're going to talk about the 10 legal issues waiting for you on Monday morning. And it'll be a panel, an opportunity to engage in dialogue with some of the experts. And we're excited about this new opportunity that we're offering as well at our conference.
Yeah, you know, it's great. Let me ask, this is just kind of an anecdotal question, Phyllis. But just as from your point of view, you're executive director at CASE, as you well know, I'm reminding the audience, okay, you know because it's a 24-hour day job these days, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it is indeed. I know you're just on a treadmill, and I appreciate taking the time today. How are you feeling about special education these days? I mean, we're coming off the pandemic. There's, talk of racism and, school board meetings are going crazy with masking, unmasking. This all affects kids, and it affects teachers. But then again, we've got all this strong funding coming in, all right? Just from your point of view, anecdotally, just your personal feeling, how do you feel about where special ed is right now?
Well, as I pull my thoughts together, and I stumble just a little bit over my words, you know, what I want to tell you is that every month I speak with directors from across the nation, and it's an informal gathering that I have of leaders in our CASE units, and these are the hardest working, most compassionate, intelligent people who are out there just going at it, asking questions, learning from each other. You know, they're putting resources into place. They're creating programs. They're looking at the individual needs of students. They're continuing that communication with parents. And they're working really hard as we still navigate the fallout from the pandemic. You know, we're still in it to some degree. We do see, you know, that decrease. I've been watching national news like everyone else. We're seeing a decrease in numbers, which is good to hear. especially in Arkansas, as I'm watching those numbers. So we're excited that that is happening across the nation. But there's still a lot of impact of COVID that we're dealing with in the schools. So I know groups of leaders across the country are doing over and above for students and for their families. On the same hand, Larry, what I can tell you is you just, you know, laid out, you know, the masking, what school boards are going through, the political divide in our country. We're seeing some mass exodus from the field, which is not good. We're seeing a lot of retirements in superintendency. We're seeing retirements in special ed directors because they just can't physically or mentally continue, and especially when they're eligible for retirement. And instead of working and hanging on, you know, a couple more years, I know there are many stories, and I know several of my colleagues who are retiring this year because of their health in some respects.
Yep.
So I think that we're seeing everything on the continuum as far as what's happening out there in our schools with leaders, from those who are, you know, pulling up their bootstraps and they are just going at it day, you know, every day, hard as they can. And then,
that are
saying, I wish you the best and I'll continue to support you in any way that I can. But I am now, after my 30 years, I'm calling this.
It's time. And, you know, you put 30 years in, you got nothing to be embarrassed about leaving. Okay?
Exactly.
Believe me. Yeah, I mean, please, I hope nobody feels that way at all. Which brings up another question, okay? And when we listed priorities a few minutes ago, you could go to talk about equity and Title IX, and, you know, the transgender stuff, compassionate, the leading, that kind of thing. But I'm curious, at some point, okay, and this is could be for any part of the profession, we're going to run out of special ed teachers. We just don't have enough, okay? And we don't have enough in the cohorts in the education schools. I mean, you have to be a very special person to do this, in my opinion, okay? They're wonderful people. They're like angels, all right? And they're hard to find. And where does I'll call it a teacher shortage, the recruitment, the need how are we going to find new teachers? What's the word on that from all your administrators? Because they must be struggling to find the staff they need. Where does that fit into all this?
They are, and coming short of stealing from each other, you know.
Unfortunately, cannibalizing the troop, yeah, right.
Exactly. You know, it is one of our critical issues. It truly is. And what I can tell you that is happening, I think you have heard me talk to, and I don't know if you've had the opportunity to talk to Lori Vanderklug. She's the former OSEP director who now she was in the last administration. So, of course, as we changed administrations, those appointments change. She now works for the Council for Exceptional Children as the Associate Executive Director of Professional Learning. And while Lori was she's still a case member, but she's a former case president. And, again, now she works for the Council for Exceptional Children, but one of her major initiatives as the OSEP director was attract, retain, and prepare. And now working for CEC, she continues to lead a group of us who are engaging in putting some resources and some webinars out for school districts to talk about growing your own, how to use the ESSER fund to grow your own. It's not going to happen overnight, Larry. It's not. No. But we've got to begin with a long-term plan, a short-term and a long-term plan for how we're going to meet the needs of students. And Lori is pulling together a number of key organizations and resources, CASE being one of those, the state directors of special education, NASB as another, working with the Cedar Center and the Progress Center, which are OSEP funded, and OSEP is at the table too. They've heard me say loud and clear that I believe that the Department of Education at the Office of Special Ed has a key role to play in this. We are implementing a federally required program, and that federally required program requires certified staff. So they
yep.
have a stake assisting us with ensuring that we have certified staff. And I've said to a number of my colleagues, I think we need to do this big national campaign on how great it is to be a special education teacher and to share all the benefits and all that, that comes from being a teacher and to really elevate the profession, I think
yeah.
is important. So there is some work on the horizon, and I'd be happy to connect you with Lori because she continues
Please do.
To
I
love-
might know her. Her name's ringing a bell in my in the back of my what's left of my brain. It's ringing a bell back there, Phyllis. And also, I will offer to you, okay? And we can talk about this. I know you're busy right now with the conference, all right? But you know, we have our magazine, Equity and Access, and that reaches 150,000 educators. If you guys want to use us to, talk about training, teacher shortages, getting special ed teachers, use us, okay? I'm offering you that to get the word out.
Thank you. Okay. We'll take
you're
you
welcome.
Up on that. And
well, I hope
and
you do.
I'll connect you with Lori, and we'll,
great,
we'll get
do
that out.
Please.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing to put on your to-do list today.
I'm writing it down right now, Larry, so I don't
good girl.
Forget.
Thank you. I'll put it number one. Number one, Phil.
I right. just put okay. a number one right beside it.
There you go. All right. No, it's going to be a great conference, and it's already sold out. You're going to – it's just going to be – you really got this together, okay? And people are dying to get together, and you're just going to have a great time with folks. So just have a great time down there, okay, in Little Rock. And what can I say? It's always great to have you here. We'll talk again soon, and let's keep on with the with your exhibit on our website and also get you involved with the magazine in terms of helping you with this recruitment, okay?
Sounds great, Larry. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And you are always welcome here, my dear. You know that. So stay safe. I'll talk to you after the conference.
Bye now.
Bye. That, everybody, is the amazing Phyllis Wolfram, who has just done magnificent work since she's been, over the last couple of years, executive director of CACE, the Council of Administrators in Special Education, at CACEC.org. CACEC.org. For us, SELtoday.org, ACE-ED.org, the top thing she talked about was equity. We are the American Consortium for Equity in Education. ACE-ED.org, that's where we'll archive this show. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.